Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at AccelerateShares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Kesslering. And on today's podcast, we welcome special guests from Origin Materials, co-founder and co-CEO John Bissell and co-CEO Rich Riley. Origin Materials is the world's leading carbon-negative materials company and recently merged with Artius Acquisition Corp, trading on the NASDAQ under the symbol AACQ. On the podcast, John and Rich discuss the founding of Origin and how its core technology works, how to build, grow, and raise capital for a startup when revenue is 15 years out, what goes into a $1 billion-plus capital project and how to de-risk it, key details regarding their merger with SPAC Artius Acquisition that valued the company at $1 billion, the case for Origin Materials stock, and more. So with no further ado, here's our podcast with John and Rich from Origin Materials. Welcome, John and Rich, to the Absolute Return Podcast. Excited to have you on the show today to discuss your journey and Origin, this new, soon-to-be public entity, which has some super cool technology, a carbon-negative materials company. Really excited to discuss that technology. But prior to getting into that, can you walk us through really the founding of Origin, where the idea came from, and the fact that it has this overarching mission behind it, which is that, you know, to be not only environmentally friendly, but beneficial to the environment?
Yeah, sure. So we really founded the company with an intent way early on, right? With an intent to make better materials. I think there's a wave of understanding and recognition of the impact of materials broadly, both end of life and climate change and all that kind of stuff. And we thought that there's got to be a better way to do this. And perhaps as somewhat naive early career engineers, you know, we thought that we could probably do that. And that was the beginning of the approach. What we looked for then were a lot of, you know, we looked for a lot of different technologies that we thought were interesting. And what we, this one that we landed on, the conversion of lignocellulosic materials into these two intermediates, we thought was by far the most interesting, both from an economic perspective, from a chemical flexibility perspective. We thought it was the right way to go. But it wasn't the only one we looked at. We looked at lots and lots and lots.
And the resulting technology, if you could give us a high-level explanation, obviously nothing proprietary, but how does it ultimately work such that, you know, you're processing wood pulp and these raw materials into these other products that you sell to customers?
Yeah. So first point is we actually use pulp wood. So wood pulp is the refined product that's often characteristically made out of pulp wood. Very different price points. The only reason why I comment on that if somebody's doing their homework. But so we use pulp wood as the feedstock. We can actually use all sorts of different things, right? We can use waste paper. We can use certain kinds of construction waste. We can use wood waste. But the way it works is we take that feedstock, whatever it happens to be, we appropriately process it and chew it up and size it down on the front end, and then we stick it in our reactors. And our reactors, you could sort of think of like digesters, chemical digesters. They're using a concentrated form of stomach acid in combination with our secret sauce catalyst. And that digestion process, you know, physically what it looks like is the wood chips or whatever else are breaking down and dissolving in the liquor. But they're also, what you can't see with the naked eye, but what's happening is it's also, it's chemically rearranging the carbon atoms into the two intermediates that we produce ultimately. The CMF, chloromethylfurfural, which once produced sort of looks like a light motor oil, right? If you were looking at it in a jar. And then the HTC, hydrothermal carbon, which really looks sort of like used coffee grounds by the time we're done with it. So that's what it is. It's a digester. You throw the wood chips in, they dissolve, they react, they do stuff, and out the other side comes this light motor oil kind of material and used coffee grounds.
It's a very interesting process and definitely unique in the marketplace. which is why it's such an interesting value proposition. What I find super interesting and intriguing about the story is that Johnny founded this a while back in 2008. And looking at your investor presentation, the company doesn't expect to generate, you know, material revenue until 2023. So you have this long lead time between company founding and revenue generation. I assume a lot of that is just, you know, developing the technology, underscoring what Origin does. But specifically from, you know, a leadership perspective and entrepreneurship perspective, how do you build, grow, and raise capital for a startup when you have this, you know, 15 years between founding and revenue generation? It would be interesting to hear that, John, from your perspective, and Rich from like an investor's perspective as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rich has been through a lot of that journey with me, just sitting in the investor seat for a significant component of it. Yeah, I think, you know, there are a couple things there. One is a lot of it is navigating the idea maze, right? For a technology like this, an infrastructural technology. So, you know, understanding what the scope of the opportunity was and the value of the technology, which I think we actually understood almost exactly early on. You know, it wasn't as though there was some sort of big jackknife partway through in terms of what we, you know, where we thought the value of the technology was and all those kinds of things. But then making our way through sort of decision by decision in terms of developing it, you know, you always have what you see as what you think might be kind of off-ramps to quicker revenue. And the reality is that, you know, as you approach each of those, you say, I don't know if that's the right decision to make, right? It's, do we want that? Do we want the off-ramp that looks like it's there for quicker revenue? Or do we want to keep going on what is the more sort of strategic long-term path? And I think, so from an entrepreneurial perspective, part of it is just trying to keep people and ourselves, right, focused on the long-term sort of objective of the technology and value proposition of the technology, knowing that it's a long strategic development process. But the second is, you know, sometimes you think that you might have some opportunities or to generate early cash flow. And when you get to them, you say, I don't know if that's actually the right way to do that, right? Whether that's an early licensing agreement or selling off parts of technology, something along those lines, right? And so for us, it was always really, you know, long-term vision, build this technology strategically, get it up to scale, you know, satisfy the market. And it turns out that the way that we did it is not terribly different from the way that a Dow or a DuPont would, or BASF would do this kind of technology development. We did it outside the major chemical companies right on our own. But in the end, you know, we ended up navigating that development idea maze somewhat similarly to the way that I think that they would in a Dow or a BASF.
Yeah, maybe I'll just add from an investor perspective, you know, it's funny, I see a lot of pitches and people put in the pitch, like expect to sell within 2 years or, you know, and there's this sort of very short term kind of like, we're going to get in, we're going to get out mentality. Something like this is the opposite. This is trying to build a fundamentally disruptive platform company that can be massive, you know, tens of billions of dollars, kind of massive. And I have to say, the amount of entrepreneurial courage, focus, and discipline it takes to do that, because, you know, for the first, you know, 10 years, there's not even a ton of feedback, you know, like you're kind of like doing your thing, you're trying to crack this code, make this science work, make it economical, you're taking your lumps, you're having to raise capital. It's hard to explain to people what you're doing. You know, there's a subset of the investors out there that even are capable or interested in understanding this. It's easy to end up in the too hard pile, you know, because this is like advanced chemistry. And so it's I think, an incredible entrepreneurial story of just grit and determination, and we're going to make this work. And that's part of what's so exciting about us being at the milestone where we are today, you know, on the eve of commercialization and really putting the dent in the universe. But man, there's 12 years of blood, sweat, and tears that got us to this moment.
No, Rich is exactly right. I mean, our team is an example of that. I mean, we have one of the most tight knit, I'll call them almost hardened teams these days that I've seen anyway. But it just feels natural to me at this point. You know, that just feels like what teams look like. But I think we're a little bit unusual in that sense.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest-growing alternative investment solution providers, with a suite of institutional-caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, symbol ARB on the TSX, is the world's first SPAC-focused ETF with a diversified portfolio of SPAC and merger arbitrage opportunities in an easy-to-use, low-cost ETF. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund ETF trades under the symbol ARB on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
And when you look at the milestone, when you speak to the milestone of commercialization, being on the eve of that, you also have another milestone with the previously announced go public transaction with Artius Acquisition. Can you go into a little bit of the background on how that deal came about?
Sure. So we basically, you know, the technology has been getting refined and refined and refined. And, you know, in recent years, tested extensively by customers, given their seal of approval. Customers, you know, we have customers slash investors like Pepsi, Nestle, and Danone, who are very supportive and very eager for Origin to get to commercial scale, because they need it to achieve their net zero goals, right? And so you have the customer demand on one side, the technology getting to a truly proven, ready to scale state on the other side. And what you need is just about $1 billion to connect those two dots, right? And there's not a lot of $1 billion checks lying around. You know, it's kind of like too big for VC. It's too patient for a lot of private equity investors. And what's great is, and we get this feedback from prominent SPAC investors all the time, this is what a SPAC was meant for. You know, technology check, customer demand check. We just need to raise the capital as quickly as possible, and a lot of it to connect those dots, build the plant, get to commercial scale. So when the SPAC market sort of heated up really at the perfect time for Origin, and we feel fortunate that we were able to partner with one of the very, very top tier SPACs. And so one of the largest SPACs, a SPAC that has a lot of credibility, they get to see all the deal flow. And to their credit, and to a little bit of our pain, they did full on private equity style, look under every rock diligence, brought in 4 consulting firms, you know, 3 law firms, you know, accounting, you know, just everything fully diligence. And by the way, this doesn't always happen. And it's one of the criticisms of a lot of SPAC transactions. It's sort of a little bit too cowboy. This is the opposite. This is incredibly experienced, thoughtful investors doing their homework and then taking it to market with their conviction. And already in our partnership, it's fantastic working with them, and they'll be joining our board. You know, three people from the SPAC, you know, world-class investors, board members joining our board, already, you know, pushing us to kind of evolve the company to, you know, public company, you know, world-class status, but in a really collaborative way. And it's been fantastic. And so for us, it was really a no-brainer, to be honest. It's been great.
One key feature of this going public transaction that really stood out to me is valued Origin at $1 billion enterprise value. So congrats on that. I'm sure that feels great. But in addition to that, $200 million PIPE financing resulting in is more than $800 million on the balance sheet once this is completed. So Rich, as you indicated, not a lot of places where you can basically raise, you know, nearly the entire enterprise value in cash for expansion plans. So it's significant in terms of the amount of capital that you're raising with respect to this going public transaction, the SPAC merger. Was wondering, in terms of use of proceeds, where's the majority of the proceeds invested? I'm seeing from your presentation here, it looks like a large portion, at least over the next few years, is going into Origin 2. Must be a massive project if you're spending like $1 billion on it.
Yeah, that's you know, honestly, that's not atypical for what we think of as the world scale for chemical plants, especially in this zone. You know, I'd say $1 billion, but you're right. It's a big project, right? It's a lot of steel on the ground. It's a lot of, you know, frankly, it's a lot of jobs. It's a lot of human beings working on it. But it's a billion-dollar project in the chemicals industry is big, but it's an order of magnitude smaller than the biggest chemical projects out there. So it's sort of, in that sense, you know, we think of it as professional class, right? It's a sizable project that's within the, you know, straight down the fairway. Maybe that's the right way to say that. But yeah, it's big project, and that is where the majority of the proceeds go. And that's, you know, as Rich was saying, with technology like this, you know, the way you get it to market is with $1 billion of capital to put in the ground and make it happen.
It's certainly interesting how this SPAC vehicle in the market really came to fruition, seemingly lining up just in time for you guys to execute on that business plan, because I'm sure raising $800 million is not easy. It never is. But getting into the details on some of the plants that you're building, I noticed that Origin 1, Sarnia, Ontario, any reason why you chose Canada? Is that just where some of the inputs lie? And how does Origin 1 differ from Origin 2? Notable that it costs quite a bit less in terms of capital expenditures.
Yeah, so in terms of site selection for Sarnia, I mean, Sarnia is a great community, right? It's one of the original North American chemical hubs. You know, one of the things that was top of mind for us, of course, as with any chemical, you know, first-class chemical producer is safety, right? And frankly, the safety program that ended up sort of setting the standard for the chemical industry was actually developed in Sarnia. I don't know if you guys knew that. So it's like a globally historically interesting chemicals hub from that perspective. You know, we've had great interactions with the Canadian government, both the provincial government and the countrywide government, and then you know, the Canadian companies have been fantastic to work with as well. So we found, generally speaking, it was just a great hub of the ecosystem for us. You know, of course, there's readily available feedstock there as well. It just made sense, right?
And then digging into the transaction here, as you know, there's a ton of SPACs out there right now, and over 400 looking for a business combination. You guys said you found the perfect partner in terms of RDS. What specifically, aside from the large amount of cash on their balance sheet, what made them stand out versus all the other potential SPACs in the market?
Yeah, I'll start. I would say, you know, one, there aren't a lot of sort of next generation chemical companies that are, you know, that come across investors' desks, right? It's a little bit different. It's not another enterprise software company or electric vehicle company, that kind of thing. And so, you know, we needed a SPAC led by people who are willing to do the work and really be thoughtful and go deep and understand the not just the technology, but the market and the opportunity. Because, you know, we need them all in. And to help us tell that story to the market, to help us make that story come true. And I can tell you, in the case of RDS, and we met with a lot of SPACs, as you might imagine, and there's a real cast of characters in the SPAC speed dating game. And what really blew us away about RDS from the get-go was just their thoughtfulness. You know, they're the guys who had always done extensive pre-reading. The senior guys run even the most detailed diligence call, where you think, well, there's no way the CEO of RDS is going to be on, you know, deep dive 3 into how, you know, this part of Origin 2 works. Not only there, is reviewed the materials and asking great questions. And, you know, it was really, for us, super impressive. And then just the fit in terms of chemistry and ease of working together and ease of working through questions and issues and that kind of stuff. And so it was really an amazing fit. And, you know, now we spend a lot of our day with them as we talk to investors and analysts and the whole ecosystem. And we really enjoy it. I mean, it's like, it's a fantastic partnership.
And now a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest growing alternative investment solution providers. With a suite of institutional caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance, the Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF, symbol 1C, ONEC on the TSX is Canada's first alternatives portfolio solution, providing exposure to 6 alternative asset classes, 10 alternative strategies, in one easy-to-use, one-choice ETF that charges a management fee of just 0.2%. The Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF trades under the symbol 1C ONEC on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
And so when you talk about that sort of partnership with your SPAC partner, in one of the main arguments against SPACs, and I appreciated you kind of set out why this is what SPACs are made for, this origin deal. One of the main arguments is the dilutive effect of the SPAC investors on the target company. One of the interesting parts of this deal structure is the earnout. Can you speak to a little bit on how that aligns the incentives for the SPAC partner as well as the target company investors in this transaction?
Sure. Yeah, about 25% of the proceeds to both the existing Origin shareholders as well as the SPAC sponsors is in the form of an earnout. And so that meaningful part of the consideration does not get earned unless the value of the company exceeds $15, $20, and $25 per share within a few years. And so we think that aligns existing shareholders with SPAC sponsors, aligns new investors, whether it was in the pipe or the SPAC investors, or hopefully our new public investors, are all aligned to maximize the value of the company.
Now, looking past the closing of the going public transaction with Artius guiding to closing in the second quarter, so certainly that's coming up. Once you're up and trading, a newly public company expected to ramp up after substantial capital spending, ramp up revenue in 2023, 2024. But prior to getting to that, this is a large capital intensive project, which can present specific risks for investors, whether it's delays, cost overruns, et cetera, et cetera. How do you mitigate some of the risks behind your growth plans?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of this is this isn't the first capital project that's ever been done in the world, right? It's not even the first chemicals capital project that's been done. So there's a huge pool of talent and resources in the industry that we can and are drawing on to make sure that we're doing a good job. We've got incredible talent out of the oil industry, out of the existing chemicals industry. And we're putting them on our team. These are really senior guys who know exactly what they're doing. I think the other piece is that they're great service providers, right? In the capital projects world, companies like Fluor have a history of executing capital projects like this incredibly well and effectively. And I think obviously we've got a sizable war chest after this transaction to use, to deploy, to mitigate risk and make sure that we execute these projects properly. So you combine best in class people out of the existing industry with best in class EPCs and service providers of various sorts, and you can get this kind of stuff done.
And looking out even further into the future, you forecast over $1 billion in revenue in the next 5 years. And you discuss this massive market opportunity of $1 trillion, which you don't hear every day. Ultimately, forecasting long-term, where do you view Origin in, say, 10-plus years? What's the ultimate goal? What do you want to become?
Yeah, I can start, and Rich will probably have some more to add to that. I think our view is the technology we're bringing to market to make CMF and HTC is a foundational technology, right? It's a technology that can be and will be one of the major building block intermediates that we build the entire world out of, right? All of the synthetic and human-made materials are really made out of a relatively small number of intermediates. And every time you add a major intermediate to that pool, you dramatically improve our ability to make new materials. And so we see, like you said, in 10 years, right? Where are we going to be? Well, we're going to have many world-scale operating assets producing material and supplying our customers, enabling them to decarbonize their businesses. And at that point, the technology will be you know, available in a whole bunch of ways, right? Whether we're licensing or joint ventures or partnering with others to deploy that more widely, we see ourselves really transforming the way that chemicals are made and enabling materials to be decarbonized in a way that they just haven't been so far.
And from a competitive perspective, what's the lay of the land in terms of competing technologies? Is yours highly proprietary? Is it patented? Do you have, you know, something that puts you ahead of the competition? Because I imagine some of these large chemicals conglomerates that you mentioned may be breathing down your neck, if not already there. I just wanted to get your perspective on, you know, what sort of competing technologies are out there and how yours differentiates.
Yeah, well, so as we were talking about earlier, right, it even if you're a major chemical company, right, it takes a long time to develop a fundamentally new process technology. And so even if they were starting today, right, it's going to take them roughly the same amount of time that it took us to develop the technology. So from that perspective, we've got a significant head start. But the reality is that in the chemical industry, these companies are very economically rational.
Right.
Historically, they would vastly prefer to work with us, right, and use their capital and their operational capabilities to deploy our technology, right, jointly with us, right, rather than, you know, spend all of that time to try to build a duplicative technology or something along those lines and compete with us head on from a technological perspective.
That makes sense. It sounds like there's nothing necessarily in development, at least publicly. So from an investor's perspective, would be curious to know, you know, once this going public transaction completes, you guys are up and trading as Origin Materials. What makes you stand out in the market? And what's a quick elevator pitch to an investor that's new to the Origin story?
I'll do the elevator pitch. It's probably easier for me. So to me, the elevator pitch is that we've spent 12 years developing a one-of-a-kind disruptive technology that converts plant-based feedstocks into a wide range of materials, including plastics. And the game changer is that our materials are carbon negative and cost competitive with petroleum-based products and recyclable. We're going after a $1 trillion market. It's sort of a once-in-a-planet transition from fossil-based feedstocks to sustainable ones. And this absolute tsunami of corporate and government net zero carbon pledges is what drives our business, helping those companies meet those goals and providing them with carbon negative materials. And we're fully funded for commercial scale and profitability and encourage people to come along for the ride.
It's interesting because not only is there, you know, compelling case in terms of, you know, what you guys are looking to accomplish in terms of revenue, EBITDA, total addressable market, but you're really addressing the demand from investors for ESG solutions. And not only are you looking to make money for investors, which obviously if people are putting up risk capital, that's something they're looking for, but you're also concurrently looking to improve the environment. So kudos to that and the mission behind Origin. And, you know, prior to wrapping things up, I just want to give you guys, you know, say if investors are curious, want to learn more about the company, where's the best place that they can look?
Yeah, originmaterials.com has got easy links to our investor presentations and press releases and things like that. And if I could just add one thing, and you mentioned ESG, and we felt that loud and clear from investors. But what's interesting is if you look at carbon emissions, people think about renewable energy and transportation, that's half of the emissions footprint. And you think about all the companies and innovation and dollars that are flowing into that, which is fantastic. The other half is from products that are made. A lot less activity, innovation. Most people don't even realize that. And so what's unique about us and you know, is trying to address that other half of the emissions footprint. And that's what a lot of these companies go on their net zero journey. First thing they do is renewable power. Then they start electrifying their transportation. But that's only half my footprint. I've got to get carbon out of my supply chain, out of my materials and products, and that's just less developed. And so it's a really exciting time for us to be bringing solutions to that very large part of the challenge here as we try to get to net zero.
You know what? That's a really good point. You never really hear that aspect of it. Constantly we're hearing about, you know, electrification of transport, EVs, you know, converting that from internal combustion engine to electric vehicles, but, you know, 50%, that's a massive number that really isn't being addressed. And, you know, you're probably one of the first, if not the first, public company doing that. So hats off to you guys. I'm sure you're super busy. So thank you for your time today, John and Rich. Really appreciate hearing the origin story. And you guys have a ton of exciting stuff going on in the future. So best of luck with all your plans on a go-forward basis, and looking forward to seeing how everything unfolds.
Thanks for having us. Look forward to coming back.
All right. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.